Okay, so today is Tuesday, February 2nd, the 20th of Shvat, and we are slowly working our way through Malachim Aleph, Perek Aleph. We spent last week talking about who Avishag was. We're going to learn a little bit more about her this week and some more about her next week as well. And the bulk of our class today will be about who Adoniyahu was. So let's just review our psukim. I'm just going to summarize about Avishag. So David is old and he can't get warm. And they search out for this beautiful young virgin woman, Avishag, who comes to warm the king. And then we haven't read these psukim starting with Pasuk Hey. And how we want to make sure that we stress here that David was never intimate with Avishag. And we talked about how it was a way to bring him to complete tshuva with his sin for Bathsheba. Next week, I think we're going to see how it might not be have anything to do with Bathsheba, but rather Avigail. Very interesting stuff. Okay, so now we start in on Adoniyahu. Keep in mind our original question: why are these stories in the book of Malachim? Why weren't they in the book of Shmuel? Because the book of Shmuel is about David HaMelech's life, whereas Malachim, seem to be starting fresh with the book of Shlomo, with the story of Shlomo HaMelech. But here we still have these leftover stories about David HaMelech. So the commentaries are going to try to explain how these are actually relevant to understanding the life of Shlomo. So keep that in mind as we read. So we're going to start with Pasuk Hey today, the Adoniah. It's a lot of names. I don't really know the reason, but I just wanted to say a lot of names. Hi, Ruth, we just started. A lot of names seem to sometimes have the vav at the end and sometimes not. So Adoniah, Adoniyahu, Yirmiah, Yirmiyahu, Yeshaya, Yeshayahu. Oh, and I forgot to say, my son, my mom's grandson, is right now in the hospital in Kfar Saba. It looks like he's doing better, thank God. But if we could dedicate this to his Refuah Shlema, Shai Tzvi Ben Zisel Nechama, he apparently, it seems, may have burst his appendix on the plane on the way to Israel. And then it continued to get worse, and now he has an abscess. But the antibiotics are doing their job. So hopefully he will be fine eventually. So thank you. Sorry about that interruption. Okay, so Pasuke. Vadonia. Ben Chagit mitnasa lemor ani amloch vayas lo rechev uprashim vechamishim ish ratzim lefanav. Adoniyahu, the son of Chagit, lifted himself up, or it says exalted himself, saying, "I will be king, I will reign." And he made for himself chariots and horsemen, and 50 men ran before him. Okay, so he's making a lot of noise. Vilo atzavo aviv miyamav, and his father, it translates here, had not angered him. We're going to see a lot of different translations for that today. You may recognize the word atzav, atzuv for sad. So we're going to leave it untranslated right now. But whatever it is, it's not good parenting. So his father had not atzav to him in his in all during all his days, lemor, saying, "Madua kacha asita? Why did you do that?" So his father never said that to him. Vigam hu tov toar me'od. He was also very good looking. Ve'oto yalda achare Avshalom. And he was born after Avshalom. Okay, now just to remind you, we're going to deal with this in the sources. Avshalom and Adoniyahu are half brothers. David is both of their fathers, but they have different mothers. We're going to see that in a minute. So why is that mentioned here? Vayud Devarav im Yoav ben Tsruya v'im Aviatar HaKohen v'yazru achare Adoniyahu. So Adoniyahu, in this rebellion, thinking he could be king, he spoke with Yoav, who you know is the general, the son of Tsruya, David's sister, his nephew, and also with Aviatar, who is one of, he was a Kohen Gadol. He lost his place. We'll talk about that in the future, not today. And he's still a Kohen.
And, I got a quick question.
Yeah.
In Vav, why does it say Aviv instead of David?
In Vav.
It says Lo Etzavo Aviv. Why not say Lo Etzavo David?
It's a good question. I think when we see the sources, that it is specifically a rebuke against David as a father, his parenting, that he made a grave parenting mistake. We saw it a little bit with Eli in the very beginning of Shmuel with his sons who did bad things also, Hophni and Pinchas, that they also had never been disciplined. So I think, I thank you for pointing that out, because I think it really is stressing his role as Abba. Okay. Vayezru acharei Adoniyahu. So Yoav and Eviatar both leave David's palace and they go with Adoniyahu. That's all we're going to read today, but you can imagine that Adoniyahu leads this kind of rebellion, usurpation during David's lifetime where he wants to be king. It ultimately fails. Spoiler alert. David, as soon as he hears about it from Bathsheba and Natan, they make an appearance here. He will anoint and put Shlomo in the throne during his lifetime. Okay, so just so everyone knows the basic facts of what's going to happen, but we're going to look at it much more carefully. Okay, so before we get into Adoniah, I wanted to fill you in on some more things about Avishag. So this is from Yalkut Shimoni, which is a later collection of Midrashim, and it tells us some interesting genealogy about Avishag. So Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha Omer, Mikoch Hatzdaka, Hametim Atidim Lechai Chayot. So Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha says, from the strength of tzedakah, of giving charity or righteousness, the dead people in the future will come to life. Bo Ur'eh, come and see, Me Elisha ben Shafat, Shelo Haita Isha Yichola Lehistakel Bafanav Shelo Tamut. So this is about the prophet Elisha, who is a prophet who took over after Eliyahu. He was Eliyahu's disciple. And a woman would not be able to look at him without dying. He was so holy. Vahaya mahalech mehar elhar, and he would go from mountain to mountain, mima'ara lema'ara, from cave to cave, vehalach leshunam, and he came to a place called Shunam, vekabalato sham isha gdola bekavod gadol, and there a woman received him with great honor. Where you can, if you want to read about this more, you can read about him. I don't think I have a thing for you, but you can read about the woman from Shunam. She set up a little attic for him to be able to stay and rest and eat. And she miraculously had a son that died, that came back to life. But look who she is. Achota shel Avishag. She is the sister of Avishag HaShunamit. And this woman is also Imo shel Ido HaNavi, the mother of Ido the prophet. So this is Avishag's yichus, her great family, that her sister is this woman who gave great honor to the Navi Elisha and had miracles happen to her as a result. And she's the aunt, Avishag, of Ido the Navi. Who was Ido? So there's a whole parak in Malachim Aleph, Parak Yud Gimel, which we will not get to because we're only doing the first two prakim of Malachim. It's a great story. It actually never mentions him by name. But he goes to give prophecies to Yeravam, who is the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, to inform him that basically he's going to fail eventually, the kingdom of Israel. And Rashi says that this Ish Elohim, this man of God mentioned, Zehaya Ido, that this was Ido. And furthermore, we see that Avishag is the great, great aunt of Zechariah, ben Barachiah, ben Ido. Hanavi. Okay, so Zechariah, he has the famous vision of the menorah that we read during Chanukah. So that is a little bit more of Avishag's yichus. Next week we'll talk about her a little more, but not this week. Okay, so here I wanted to remind you of David's children and how they were born and why Adoniyahu is coming on the scene at this point in the story. So we have Bechoro Amnon, his firstborn Amnon. Amnon, and he was born to Ahinoam. So Amnon is the one who rapes Tamar. The second one is Kilav, who is the son of Avigal. For some reason, that confounds all of the commentaries. We don't know anything about him. And he comes from Avigal, who's this righteous woman. We see nothing bad about her. And even when we talk about her next week, it's only going to be in terms of David's wrongdoing, not Avigal's. and she has this son, and it confounds everybody why he disappears and why he's not up for the kingship. Okay? V'hashlishi, it could be, actually I read one thing, I think by, it might have been by Rabbi Alex. Oh, he's such a great teacher, and he wrote a whole book on the Book of Kings. Ruth, do you know who I'm talking about? Alex from the Gush?
I'm on mute. Alex Israel.
Yes, thank you. Alex Israel. Okay, so I think it might be from him that even here, when it says Avigal Eshet Naval HaKarmeli, that Avigal is the wife of Naval, that perhaps there was some suspicion of Kil'av, even though a miracle happened where he was made to look exactly like David, perhaps there was suspicion in his who he came from. Okay. V'hashlishi Avshalom ben Ma'acha. So his mother is Ma'acha. He was the daughter of the king of Geshur. And we know what happened to Avshalom in his rebellion. And he got hanged on the tree by his hair. And then Yoav, who we've been talking about, shot arrows into him. He died. V'harevi'i, the fourth one, is Adoniyahu. So that's how we get to Adoniyahu, the son of Chagit. And then I just highlighted here, Chamishi, Shvataya, V'ashishi, Yitraim, who we don't know about. Perhaps when we read last week about the angel of destruction, that when David, we saw that source that said that the angel of destruction killed David's four children, that we, and also God, the Hachozah, the seer. So maybe these children were lost at that time because we don't hear from them again. Okay, so that's where Adoniah is in the lineup, and that's why he is here today rebelling. He's the next in line. Here's a Gemara from Baba Batra, quoting our psukim, and he was also a very handsome man, and she gave birth to him after Avshalom. So here it's addressing, they have different mothers. What does it mean, she gave birth to him after Avshalom? But Adoniah wasn't the son of Chagit, and Avshalom was the son of Ma'acha. So why does the verse state, and she gave birth to him after Avshalom, as if they were the sons of the same mother? Rather, since Adoniah acted in a manner fit for Avshalom, who also rebelled against the monarchy, the verse linked him to Avshalom, referring to him as his full brother. So even though they weren't full brothers biologically, they were full brothers in doing wrong against David HaMelech. Okay, and here's another Gemara about the 50 men and the chariots and everything. And this is very weird. If we have time, we'll look at another weird source that elaborates on this. So now Adoniah, son of Chagit, from the Gemara Bavli Sanhedrin. Adoniah, son of Chagit, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. Rav Yehuda says that Rav says the term exalted himself teaches that he sought for the monarchy to fit him, but it did not fit him. We'll see a Rashi on that. The verse continues, and he prepared for himself chariots and riders and 50 people to run before him. The Gemara asks, what is the novelty of these actions since other wealthy people do the same, even if they are not the sons of kings with designs on the throne? Meaning, this was a common thing for any wealthy person to have, what's it called when the president has his whole group of cars and everything? What's the word for that?
A motorcade.
Right. So every wealthy person would have had a motorcade in these days. So why is it strange that Adoniah would have it? Why do we have to go into all the details of all this? Rav Yehuda says that Rav says what was unique was that the runners all had their spleens removed and had the soles of their feet hollowed, removing the flesh of their feet. And these two procedures enhanced their speed. So he had these ultra runners that had these surgical procedures, elective surgical procedures, to make them even faster. If we have time, we'll see, or maybe I'll just mention it to you. So Rashi on the fitting him. So the Hebrew there is bikesh lehol mo v'lo holamato. So it didn't fit him. He wanted it to fit him, and it didn't fit him. Shebikesh lehol mo v'lo holamato, Rashi. He tried to put the crown on his head, but it didn't fit him. There was some kind of rod inside the circle, empty circle space of the crown, from one side of the crown to the other. ve'enam itiashev b'rosho, ela lemi sheyesh lo charitz b'rosho. And it would only fit on someone's head who had some kind of cleft in their head. V'hi edut lebeit David. And this would be the testimony that you are the righteous heir to the house of David. Shekol ha-ra'ui l'malchut, anybody who was fitting for being the ruler or worthy, holamato, it would fit him. U'misha eno ra'ui l'malchut, eno holamato. And anybody who wasn't worthy to be the king, it wouldn't fit him. So can you imagine there was some genetic thing in their heads, some sort of cleft that this bar would fit perfectly on top of, and Adoniyahu did not inherit that from David's line. He got his mother's head, I guess. And from my research, it seems like this is originally in the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud. So it is an early source. I couldn't find it in there. And also it's the Aramaic there is difficult. So I just took it from the Rashi here. But it's a very early source, this idea that the worthy heirs to King David would have some sort of cleft in their head. Okay, so now we have a series of sources that take different psukim, written, a couple of them written by Shlomo, ironically, to prove sort of Adoniyahu's unworthiness. So this pasuk is from Kohelet, which was written by Shlomo. Just Shlomo wrote Kohelet, Mishlei, Proverbs, and Shir Shirim, the Song of Songs. So here is a pasuk from Perek Zayin of Kohelet. Tov ka'as mischok, ki beroa panim itav lev. Vexation, or ka'as is usually anger, vexation is better than laughter, for with a stern countenance, the heart will rejoice. Kohelet Rabbah, the Midrash on this pasuk says, Tov ka'as mischok, vexation is better than laughter. Amar Shlomo, Shlomo said, because he's the author, Ilu ka'as Abba al Adonia kim'a, if only Abba had gotten a little bit angry at Adonia, and Chaim, this goes back to what you said with Aviv, it's even using like the Abba, you know, Abba is a less formal as opposed to Av. Tov hayalo mischok. That would have been better for him than laughter, for Adonia. Shesachaka alav midat adin. Because in the end, the attribute of justice laughed at him. Lama? Why? Ki bero panim itav lev. Because a stern countenance, the heart will rejoice. Elo heralo panim. If only father had a stern countenance with him, it would have brought him to good. Ela, rather, we read in our chapter, below atzavo aviv miyamav, his father never had this sternness with him, this midrash would be saying. Okay, so it's interesting to hear the midrash in Shlomo HaMelech's voice about how his father parented his brother, his half-brother. Okay, another pasuk that Shlomo wrote, Ben chacham musar av vileitz lo shama ge'ara. A wise son seeks his father's discipline, but a scorner does not listen to rebuke. And here's the Ralbag, Gersonides, medieval commentary, on Mishle. Ben chacham, the son of a wise man, hu hasiba v'ben shiye chacham hu musar ha'av. So the whole reason why you would have a wise man would be the rebuke of the father, Shehiknehu oto b'ktanuto, that he imbued in him from his youth, ki hamuser hu miyashir al hasagata chokma, because the rebuke straightens him so that he can grasp wisdom. V'hasiba sheyalatz v'lo yifne lehishtadal b'hasagata chokma, and the reason why he would be kind of like a clown, how do they, a scorner, leitzan is a clown, right, same word, and he wouldn't turn to strive in this grasping of wisdom, behashlemut and completeness. Humipne shaloshama ge'ara me'aviv. It would be because he never heard this rebuke from his father. Kamoha inyan ve'adonia ben chagit. Just like Adonia ben chagit, shelo atzavo aviv mi'amav lemor madua kacha asita. Quoting our pasuk in full, that his father never, this would be rebuke here, saying, why did you do this? Okay.
So I asked Stacey, was he the only one who wasn't rebuked? Is it kind of
no,
is it singled out?
So I remember teaching this also with Chofni and Pinchas, the sons of Eli, but I think it's a different language. So he gets similar treatment among the sources that he also didn't discipline his children, but not with the same language.
But I guess I'm saying amongst Aviv's children.
Oh, no, no, no. Avshalom, Avshalom also. We saw it similar. Again, not in the same language, but we saw it with Avshalom as well. I didn't bring in those sources, so sorry.
But is the implication for the ones that were good that he did rebuke them?
Oh, that's a good question. we saw from the simple meaning, from the simple verses with Amnon, that he didn't rebuke, which is what led Avshalom to murder him. So we saw that pretty explicitly. So, and we discussed at the time that David, rightly or wrongly, accepted this as his fate for the sin with Bathsheba, that he knew in the prophecy from Nathan that that five children would die. So maybe that was why David didn't put any effort into disciplining. I don't know. But it's a good question. Okay, so now we're going to try to work on defining that atzav word that we take to usually mean sadness. So we have a couple different definitions through a couple different usages in Bereshit, and both of the commentaries on here bring in our pasuk as well. So this first one, I did it in chronological order of the commentary, Haktav v'Hakabbalah. I'm confusing him with somebody else, so I don't know when he lived. I didn't look him up. I apologize. I'll try. Does somebody want to Google him really quickly? Haktav v'Hakabbalah, while I talk? If you want to. Okay, so this is from the story of, right before the story of Noach, when Hashem decides to destroy the world. So Ve'enachem Hashem ki asa et Adam. Hashem regrets that he had made man, ba'aretz, on the land, v'yit atzev elibo. And here we see it in the hit pe'el, so it's in the reflexive. He did something to his own heart. Okay? It's interesting to think of what we've learned about the word so far. He rebuked his own heart, but we're going to see something different. V'nireh li od kavana acheret b'mikra zeh. I see another intent in this pasuk. Lashon v'yit atzev, yesh lefaresh mi'inyan tefech etzev, shebelashon rabotinu. So we can learn this language of sadness, let's not say sadness, atzev. We can explain from the matter of the tefach etzev that's in the language of our rabbis in the Talmud. So I'm sorry I didn't include it. But basically, a tefach is a hand's breadth, and it talks about an expanded tefach, which would be with your fingers spread about, and then a tefach etzev, which would be with your fingers tight together. So it's a constriction of some sort. She'inyano mitzumtzam, that its matter is constriction. U'mikevan v'shi'uro lo pachot v'lo yoter, and he intended in his measurement not less and not more. And from this matter, he's going to apply it to our pasuk, v'lo atzavo aviv, lo tzimtzemoto. David never constricted him b'ma'aseh, in his actions. Lo asalo gvul v'geder b'tahalichotav. He never put any boundaries or fences on his actions. Aval henichu chofshi. He left him free. La'asot kol ma shelibo chafetz. To do whatever his heart desired. And then it gives a Yiddish word, which Baruch Hashem, Google Translate, does Yiddish. If you don't know, it's great. So I don't know how to pronounce it. If somebody wants to unmute and can pronounce it, it means restricted. Anybody? Okay. We're a bunch of Yankees here, all of us Americans. Okay. So that is one understanding of it. That we would translate this then as David never restricted Adonia.
Robert Alter translates it. Well, he doesn't, but he says maybe because of the Greek that he never restrained him.
Oh, restrained. That's similar to restricted. Good.
Yeah, but it shows, you know, it shows more of the motivation.
Right. Okay, so now we're going to Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, 19th century German rabbi. who was very interested in language. In fact, I'll just explain as an aside, this pasuk that the Ketav Kabbalah quoted, where it says, Vayinachem, were any of you surprised to know a little bit of Hebrew when I translated that as Hashem regretted?
Yes, because Nechama is very different.
Yes, my name is Nechama, right? It's comfort. So it means both. And there's a lot of Hebrew words, and Rav Hirsch really likes to explain these, that mean its opposite. We also have them in English. My favorite is cleave. A man shall cleave to his wife, and then you have a cleaver. So this is a good example in Hebrew of comfort and regret. So Rav Hirsch actually explains, and I find this really beautiful, that both comfort and regret are going from one emotional state, maybe a neutral emotional state, to a different one. So when you, or not a neutral. So when you comfort someone, you're taking them from a negative emotional state into a positive. Whereas when someone regrets something, they're going from a positive emotional state into a negative one of regret. So that's the root of that shoresh, of that root. Okay, so so back to Rav Hirsch and how he's going to define this. So this is the first appearance of this word. From Noach, it's the second one. El ha'isha amar. So to the woman, he said, you might have gotten the context knowing that this is in chapter 3. This is when they receive their punishments for having eaten from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So to the woman, he said, harba arbe itzvonech. I will surely increase your... And again, we might have understood this as sadness, but now we have another element. We could add restrictiveness, restraining. I don't know. We'll see what Rav Hirsch says. V'haronech, and your pregnancy, be'etzev teldi banim. With etzev, you will give birth to children. So these are, the Rashi explains that these are three forms of difficulty of punishment a woman will have, both in pregnancy, giving birth, and raising children. And I'm not even going to translate the last one. That's a whole shir, that last half of the pasuk. Okay, so Rav Hirsch, v'itzavon. Ein itzavon, ela ke'ev ruchani o nafshi. So he right away says, itzavon is some kind of pain, spiritual or soulful pain. So not physical pain, but spiritual or soulful. If we had seen itzavon as a meaning for physical pain, then it would be related to the result, that is seen in the ruach and the soul, in the spirit and the soul. So he's saying sometimes it might manifest as a painful, but that would only be because of the pain you're having, like, you know, my heart hurts, that type of thing, but not from a heart attack, God forbid, but from this spiritual or soulful pain. Itzavon nigzar mishorash etzav. So he's telling us that itzavon is from the shorash ayin tzadik bet, which is equal to ayin zayin bet, azav, which means abandoned. So certain letters, if you just say to yourself, tsa and za, you'll feel with your tongue and the roof of your mouth that it comes from the same place. So a lot of grammarians, biblical grammarians, will say that they're related and you can switch those letters and it will still maintain a similar meaning. Okay, nimtzeit mashmaut etzav aziva ba'al korcho. So etzav therefore means abandonment against his will. Prisha, some sort of separation, shenich pata b'darkei alimut, that's done by way of violence. Hu hava omer, I would say, hit nazrut, which is abstaining. Vitur, giving up. Okay? Adam chash hargashat etzev, a person feels this feeling of etzev, or senses this feeling of etzev, im ne'alatz levater al devar, if he's really trying to give something up, shebikesh lehasig o lehachzik bo, that he's trying to grasp it or to strengthen it. Bilo atzavu aviv miyamav, our pasuk, his father never did this to him in his days. David lo hirgil et beno levitrim. David never got his son used to the idea of giving something up, of abstaining. Lo darash mimenu lehinazer medavor. He never demanded from him to abstain from anything. Vit atzev elibo. From this was our pasuk in Bereshit that Hashem did this within his heart. Dibra Torah b'lashon b'nei Adam. The Torah anthropomorphizes God in order that we humans should understand it. Hakadosh Baruch Hu chash. Hashem sensed she'alav lifrosh min ha'adam, that he had to separate from man, levater alav, to give up on him. Kvar ne'amar le'adam tchila bi'itzavon tochalna. So it's already been stated for Adam in the beginning, you will eat with sadness. So again, the same word in the punishment, both the man and the woman have this notion of itzavon, which we're seeing here is abstaining, refraining, separating, abandoning. Din ha'itzavon, this judgment of itzavon, kaval Adam ma'amad chadash. It establishes for man a new standing, l'tkufa mimushachet ma'od, that will be for a long, long period. Ad ko lo yada ha'adam vitrim. Until this point of the sin, man never knew what it meant to give up, to have to give up something. Ein yitzur ba'olam, there was no creation in the world, lehotzi et ha'adam hamakir yisurei itzavon, that would bring out in man this recognition of the trials of itzavon, of having to give up or refrain or abstain. Ein yitzur matzig tviot, there was no creation that presented demands. Sorry. She'enan yicholot lavo al sipukan, where he still couldn't be satisfied. Lo kein ha'adam mishachet. This is not the case for man once he sinned. Lo od yat'im hatava l'mashalot libo. No longer would nature be suitable for all of the desires of his heart. Alav leheavekimo ahakol. It was on him to struggle with everything. Hu lo yasig davar ela bederach hitnazrut. He would not grasp anything except for by way of abstaining. Lo yizkeh betova besimcha. He wouldn't merit goodness and joyfulness. Ela tzmurot vitur al tova acheret. Only with the giving up of, in exchange for giving up some other goodness. Sort of like the expression, you can't dance at two weddings. So we only know goodness and joyfulness because we've had to give something else up. And this is introduced after the sin, this idea of that we can't have everything we want. And that's what David had given over to his son Adoniyahu, that he could have everything that he wanted, that there was no sense of needing to give something up or abstain. Okay, any questions on that? Okay, I'm going to save this for a doc for later because we aren't there yet. Okay, so given all those definitions of Yitzuv and David's bad parenting and why Adoniyahu ended up the way he did, and as Ruth pointed out also, Avshalom, there was this really interesting chashuv. Yes, and Amnon, exactly, yes. Exactly. They don't have any sense of needing. They get everything they want, and it causes huge tragedy for the family. Okay, so then there was this interesting Chashukei Chamed. So for those of you who have not been with me with a Chashukei Chamed before, this is Rav Zilberstein, who I think is still alive today in Jerusalem. I'm not sure. And you may have seen his book translated into English, Vaha Revna, also in Hebrew, where he goes through the weekly parsha and he organizes sha'ilot u'tshuvot, halachic questions that he's received and the answers he gave according to the parsha. And Chashukei Chamed is very similar, but instead of according to the parsha, he does it according to different passages in the Gemara. So this is, I don't even know what it's talking about, in Zavachim, the Gemara in Zavachim. So tasmonet nedira, there's a very rare syndrome, im yich'as hayalet hazeh hu alul lamut, whereas if a boy who has this rare syndrome, he will die if he gets angry. Okay, so it's being forced into the situation that David put himself into with his children. So we're going to finish with this because I just couldn't pass it up. It was too interesting. She'ela. So here's the question. Yeshno yelet shebishal arba mumim moladim balev. He has four different deformities in his heart he was born with. Asur lo lichos, and it's forbidden for him to get angry. Asur lo liot atzuv, and it's forbidden for him to be sad. I actually helped a friend a long time ago whose son was born with a heart defect, and she was trying to pump milk for him, but if he started crying, she couldn't let him cry, and so I would come and just hold the baby while she would pump milk, because children with these heart issues really can't be in any distress. He, thank God, the parents were able to discipline him. He actually passed away a year ago. He was 19 years old, Saadia. They lived in Philadelphia many years ago, Yaakov and Elisheva Simon, if you remember them. Thank God he grew up to be a good boy. Okay. And his memory shall be blessed. Hu yalid regel b'kol hayaladim. So he's a normal child, like all other child. Hu rats, mishtovev, samach v'tzohel. He runs around, he's happy, he's mischievous, does all these things. Ulam, l'maase, midubar b'yalid shenolad im tismonet nidira u'mesukenet. But we're speaking of a child who is born with a syndrome that's very rare and dangerous. Shemamida et chayav besakana muchashit. It puts his life in tangible danger. Ketotza'a mikamut mugberet shel shuman v'shririm saviv orek haraya shelo. So these are a lot of medical terms, but there's some sort of muscle and fat thing that goes around an aorta or a vein of his lung. Okay, if somebody, Chaim, if you knew all the Hebrew medical terms and you knew what this was talking about, you can fill in. Okay. B'chol pa'am shehu k'tzat ko'es. Anytime he's a little bit angry, ha'mumim sha'alibo, these deformities on his heart, misarbim, suffer. L'shatef pe'ula imarechet aspakat adam. And it joins together with the system of his blood, how his blood goes around, v'hu machchil. Just to challenge you, anybody want to guess what that word is? Machchil. You guys, all of you probably know the shoresh.
Chole?
No, that would be without the chaf. The chaf is part of the shoresh.
He gets blue.
Yes, kachol. Kachol v'levan. You guys all know that word.
Lack of oxygen, it must mean.
Yeah. Okay, so he gets blue. Nish'alet ha'sheila. So the question is asked. Mahaya kore ilu haya yalid yehudi shekasher hu mevakesh le'achol terimeter basar v'lishtot chetzi lug yain. So what would happen with a Jewish child if he were to ask to eat this huge amount of meat and to drink this large amount of wine, umisarvim latet lo, and the parents refuse to give them? So what's this referring to? You guys probably know. The ben sora amora, the gluttonous, rebellious son that you're supposed to put to death. He would get excited and angry. And then he becomes in this life danger and he's going to die. Can we give to him what he wants because to save his life? Or perhaps if we satisfy his request, he will grow up to steal from people, and it's better that he die with merits than that he will die with being obligated to die because he did all these horrible things. And this is the case of the rebellious son, that why he's put to death before he's actually done anything wrong, because the rabbis see in his behavior and his actions that he's just going to end up doing some horrible crime and it's better to kill him now. And if the Talmud, of course, tells us that this case never happened and it's just there for us to learn. Umnam ben soror more, that's what the boy is called, the ben soror more, the rebellious child, eno chayav ela ad shignov mishal aviv ve'od devarim harbe. But this rebellious son is actually not liable for death until he steals from his father and many other things, as are explained in the Rambam. Aval ro'im et ruach ha'dvarim, but we see the spirit of the thing, shemutav sheyamut zakai, that it's better that he die with merits, ve'al yamut chayav, and not die when he actually has to die for a capital crime. Is this child destined to sprout like the rebellious son? Okay, it's a good question, and it's a good answer too. Tshuva, here's the answer. Yitachin sheyalad kazeh. It's possible that a boy like this, afilu imachal tartimer basar v'chetzi logain, even if he ate so much meat and wine, lo yafach liot ben soromera. He won't turn into this rebellious son. Me'acher ubeven soromera ne'amar einenu shomea lekoleinu zolel v'sovei. He doesn't listen to his parents' voice. That's one of the key components of diagnosing the rebellious son. Yalad kamo nasu she'elatenu, but the boy in our question, shomea lekol aviv v'imo, he listens to the voice of his father and mother. So he doesn't fit all the criteria. Ela shehem menu'im milehochiach oto. Rather, they just refrain from rebuking him. Biglal machalato, because of his illness. Yalad ze eno betiv o zolel v'sovei. This boy is not in his nature gluttonous in these bad things. Ela shemanua milishmoa tochecha biglal machalato. Rather, he refrains from hearing rebuke because of his sickness. Yitachen shelo nichla bichlal shel ben Torah Mora. And therefore, it's possible he might not be included in this definition of the rebellious son. Ulam, however, al horav mutalet hachova lechancho mibli liyasro v'yitpalelu la'ashem yitbarach. It's on his parents to take the obligation of his chinuch, his education, without rebuking him, and to daven to Hashem, shelamrot machlato yisha'er Yehudi kasher, that despite his illness, he will remain a kosher Jew. Ki machlato goramet lo, she'en hu bar tochecha, because it's the illness that causes that he shouldn't be somebody who's rebuked. Ve'umnam al Avshalom ben David hamelech ne'amar ve'lo atzavo aviv me'olam. And however, it's said on Avshalom, the son of David hamelech, that he didn't rebuke him or constrain him or constrict him. And again, you see he says Avshalom. There was something about Avshalom here. This exact quote is obviously from our pasuk about Adoniah, but it's both of them. And Amnon, his story reminded. Ve'sham hayu tzrichim la'atzivo. And there he needed to constrain him, restrict him, rebuke him. Ki haya bari, because Avshalom and Adoniah and Amnon were all healthy. Aval yelad ze, but this boy, Hashem yitbarach, hu ze shegazar alav machala zo, ba'ala tasmonet, she'im yichas alu lamot. Hashem's the one that decreed on this boy, this illness, that he would have this syndrome, that if you are angry at him, he could die. Hashem yitbarach yishmaruhu v'yechayuhu leval yafoch liyal milistam habriot. So therefore, it's on Hashem to guard him and to make him live without turning into one who would steal from, to be a bandit, is essentially what it's saying. Kishirav yechanchuhu heitev gamni bli yilasro. When his parents educate him well, even without rebuking him. V'yuan b'ramban, and you should look up in the Rambam there, shekatav la'achar achila zo hamichu eret, that after it says eating, something about ugliness, I don't know, v'chazar v'shana v'shileish lashon zeh, and he repeats it three times, this language, v'inyanenu in achila zo michu eret. But in our matter of this boy with this syndrome, this type of eating is not ugly, or whatever this word is, some kind of really negative connotation. Kinotzar b'matzav miyuchad, because he was created under special circumstances, ve'ulai havi achiloto ke'ain su'dat mitzvah. And maybe even if we feed him this, if he asks for this amount of meat and this amount of wine, maybe it's an obligatory meal. It's a meal of a mitzvah. Ve'eno bichlal atid shilastem et habriot. And it has nothing to do with a future where he would become a bandit. But because it's saving his life to not make him angry, it could be a obligatory festive meal of a su'udat mitzvah. Okay.
Sorry, Stacey, did you say that? Why is that abandoned? Does it not mean that you'll steal from people? Is that not the same word as we had before?
Right. I'm sorry if you didn't hear me. I meant bandit. B-A-N-D-I-T.
Oh, bandit. Sorry. Yeah.
And now, because you asked that, I have to tell my funny story. Have I ever told you my funny story about listim? Okay, so my husband's cousins, has cousins who live in Sderot. Their parents made Aliyah from America, so they are all English speakers. So if you ever remember, a cute young woman during the time that Sderot was being bombed would speak in English on CNN. That was my husband's cousin, because she was one of the few English speakers in Sderot. They actually, she and some of her siblings moved there as sort of a pioneering thing to help raise the level of some of the development towns in Israel. So it also happens to be that the Rosh Yeshiva of the Hesder Yeshiva in Sderot is also an Anglo, speaks English. And so one Erev Sukkot, there were a couple of yeshiva boys who wanted to spend Sukkot in Sderot at the last minute, and they hadn't made any plans or accommodations, and the Rosh Yeshiva was out of town, so they gave them our cousin's phone number, since they didn't speak any Hebrew. And our cousin didn't know where to put them. She had a full house herself. Her neighbors were out of town, but she didn't feel comfortable giving over their house, but she agreed with them that they could sleep in the sukkah, but they couldn't enter the house. And then they said, well, what if we have to go to the bathroom? And she said, fine, only to use the bathroom, but then you have to leave. Unbeknownst to our cousin, the neighbors on the other side had asked permission for their elderly parents to stay in the house. So at 3 a.m, one of the yeshiva bachurs had gotten up to go to the bathroom, and one of the elderly parents had also gotten up and sees this young man in the house and starts screaming. And the yeshiva bachur, who knew no Hebrew, but he did know Aramaic from the Gemara, so he said, Anu lo listim, anu lo listim, which is not a modern Hebrew word, but you can see it's used here, so you should probably be familiar with it. And I think now we continue to have a good laugh about it now. So that's my story for you about the word listim, bandit. Okay, so just to summarize, we learned today about Avishag's superior Yichus, that she is the sister of this woman from Shunam, and she's the aunt of Ido the prophet and the great-great-aunt of Zechariah the prophet. And then we went into Adonia and why he would think, we actually haven't really explored why he would think at that moment that he merited to be king. We're going to explore that next week. But who he was and his flaws, and how those flaws, a lot of them can be attributed to David and his inability to put boundaries on his son. And he didn't have any sense of what it meant to abstain from anything. And he felt he could get anything he wanted, which led him to think that he could be king. And the challenges of parenting, and the specific challenges of parenting a child with special physical needs, who actually, for his own life's sake, can't get angry. So that's what we did today. So thank you, everybody.